fine to pay their eating the food.
Senate Committee on Business and Consumer Affairs, Wednesday, June 8, 1983, at 3 p.m. in hearing room B of the Capitol Building. This is a work session on Senate Bill 427 relating to engineer. Senate Bill 783 relating to game meat. House Bill 2793 relating to sale of motor vehicles. House Bill 2300 relating to landscaping, and a public hearing on House Bill 2123 relating to property.
Come to order. Committee assistants will note the members who are present, and the ones who are absent are excused. We have a beautiful new committee assistant beginning today, and her name is Kathy. Everybody knows Kathy. Oh, Katie.
Senator Hammond.
Here.
Senator House. Senator Ripper. Senator Thorne.
Here.
Senator Tim.
Here.
Chairman Yee.
Here. Having a quorum, we are going to start with House Bill 2206. And we need a reconsideration of House Bill 2206 because the committee has a request to send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation instead of it's going to Government Operations Committee.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Hannon.
I would move that we bring House Bill 2206 that was sent out of committee on Monday back to the committee for purposes of making another motion. So at this time, I first make the motion that we bring House Bill 2206 back to the committee.
Senator Hannon moves to reconsider the motion which we send House Bill 2206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Or if there is no objection, the motion is carried. We have House Bill 2206 in front of us.
Okay, Madam Chair, I would now move that we send House Bill 2206 to the Senate President and ask specifically that the subsequent referral to Government Operations be rescinded and that the bill be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hannon moves to send House Bill 2206 amended, it was amended,
yes,
in the House, amended to the President's desk with a request that he rescind the subsequent referral to Government Operations Committee and send it to the floor with our due pass recommendation. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, say no. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hammond.
Aye.
Senator Ripper, Senator Thorne.
Aye.
Senator Tim.
Aye.
Chairman Yee.
Aye. Motion is carried. And we will write a letter and send this to the President's desk. We are going to have a hearing and work session on Senate Bill 783. That's the game meat bill. And we have proposed amendments. Does everybody has proposed amendment on Senate Bill 783 in front of you? Senator Thorne, do you want to go over the amendment for the committee,
to,
please?
I'd be happy to. There's attached in the book are our amendments, and what we're working from, Madam Chair, is Legislative Council amendments to Senate Bill 783-3, 6783, parens G2 in parens. I think is yes, those are the amendments we want to work to. In the book there's some other amendments, but that's the set of amendments that have been hand engrossed into the bill, which I think all of us have. Briefly, the amendments now would, in section 2, allow for the people that are to do the inspection, specifically Department of Agricultural employees or people as provided in Chapter 603, and then the department is given the charge in the new language to enter into a training process where Fish and Wildlife and State Police people are also trained as provided in Chapter 603 and 619. So if you recall, there was some question on those two agencies being able to make the approval. Then there is a modified definition for charitable organizations, and you get down to about line 12, and you can see that the game meat, which is defined on line 13, includes and other charitable organizations or public institutions approved by the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, and that would accommodate the question that was raised about the correctional facilities, if you'll remember that question was raised. And then game meat is defined as it was defined in the bill. It does not include fish at this point, and the reason is concern in being able to properly inspect and make sure that fish maintained its quality before being served. Section 3 of the original bill was deleted. If you recall, the Health Division objected to that section, and with good cause, because it would have prohibited some of their inspection process. Compromise just deleted that section. The rest of the bill is a reaffirmation of the inspection process and charitable organization. And then Section 5 is a sort of a disclaimer indicating that no civil or criminal sanctions shall be imposed upon the State Department of Agriculture employees, the Fish and Wildlife people, and the State Police for good faith inspection of game meat as provided in Section 2. It's my understanding that the agencies that were involved and before the committee who had minor disagreements have all had them worked out, and this is now an acceptable piece of legislation. And I guess that some of those agencies are in the room, and if they object to that statement, maybe they ought to indicate so. Otherwise, I think it's ready for action.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's too bad that they can't include fish, because it seems to me at a time when foods are so expensive, and if fish can be used, it will be good nutritionally, and also good for their variety of food.
I would agree with the theory, Madam Chair. I think the problem is if you recall, what we have here is all meat that has to be processed and handled through a facility that is inspected. Unfortunately, fish, although it is a very nutritious food, being able to assure that inspection process, fish does not necessarily have to be processed or cut and wrapped in a way similar to the other items we've defined, and so it would circumvent the whole process, and you might run the risk of public health damage that was felt, so that's why it was not included at this time. It'd be my thought that we get this program going, conceivably there could be a system then worked out to accommodate fish in the future. And it may well involve in some of those areas where there are packing facilities that are inspected that maybe they would be willing to participate. But at this point, the processing facilities are substantially limited, and I think it would only encumber trying to get this thing online to try to include fish.
Chairperson, I'd move the amendments dated 6783G2.
Senator Timms moves to adopt amendment dated June 7, 83, G2. Any further discussion? If there's no objection, the amendment is adopted.
I move the bill, Senate Bill 783, as amendment to the floor, the due pass recommendation.
Senator Timms moves to send amended Senate Bill 783 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any further discussions? If not, the committee clerk will call the roll. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, say no. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hannon.
Aye.
Senator Houck. Senator Ripper. Senator Thorne.
Aye.
Senator Tim.
Aye.
Chairman Yee.
Aye. Motion is carried. Senator Thorne will carry the bill.
Okay.
Moving speedily along, we are going to have work session on Senate Bill 427. That's on the engineer's bill. Annetta, will you go over the status of the bill with a committee, please. Do we have amendment?
No.
We don't have amendment.
The committee heard testimony on Senate Bill 427 on May 25. There was no opposition and no proposed amendments. The bill addresses the issues of the redefinition of responsible charge to include, to mean direct supervision. And the committee had a discussion about what is meant by direct supervision. Then it also clarifies the responsibility of a licensee, either an engineer or a land surveyor when they are working on their own property. And it allows out-of-state firms to offer their services as long as they are willing to comply with the Oregon engineering laws and that they have supervision by someone licensed in Oregon. And it deletes the fees for the firms, corporations, and partnerships because those individuals are licensed by the firm.
Thank you, Annetta. What is the committee's pleasure? There is no amendment. And is everybody clear on the issue of direct supervision? Responsible charges means direct supervision. I have a question for, is Dr. Knudsen here? We have a question for you. Will you come up and answer one question regarding responsible charge? There were a lot of discussion on the hearing day.
Yes, Senator.
That responsible charge means direct supervision. And does direct supervision mean personal supervision, the person on the site for supervision?
Thank you, Senator. My name is James Knudsen. I'm president of the Board of Engineering Examiners. It does not necessarily mean personal supervision on the site. It does mean, though, supervision of the work. For example, a surveyor, a licensed surveyor, need not be out with the crew surveying, but the surveyor does check all of their work that they do every day and is responsible for the work that they do. But at present, he need not be out with the crew during the work. And the same is true as engineering, too.
He personally supervises the work, but not necessarily on the site.
Not necessarily on the site. But he does go over all of their work, and he is responsible for their work and checks all of their calculations. At times, he would be on the site, but is not on the site all the time.
So can an engineer who lives in Newport directly supervise a job in Salem?
I would say that he could not. That if he was that far away, he would have to be on the site to supervise an engineering job. And he may not be there all the time, but certainly there a majority of the time, and certainly there the critical times.
So he is personally at the site?
Yes.
Whenever it is critical?
Yes.
To be there?
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm. He certainly couldn't supervise it in absentia for the whole job.
So he would be there personally for the majority of the time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does the committee have any other questions?
Madam Chair,
Dr. Knudsen.
Senator Knudsen. Many bills and engineers. I'm trying to. Could you give me the main thrust of this bill? Why do we have to have it?
Well, thank you, Senator Timms. The main reason was largely grew out of our law enforcement committee and a rules committee, and there were certain areas of the bill that were unclear, and we felt these were largely housekeeping items. One of them was to include the term direct supervision rather than the term control for that one. I don't have a copy of the bill here. I'm trying to recall. Another one was to clarify the activities of an engineer or a surveyor on their own property, that they could perform work on their own property without being licensed unless the work did impact on the health and welfare of the safety of the public. The third one was remove the requirement for firms to become registered. And there was a fourth one, and I don't recall what that was.
Offering of services.
That's right. The clarifying the ability of out-of-state firms to offer services in the state and to guarantee that if they do get these services, then they will become registered and have a registered Oregon engineer supervising the work. And these were problems that had come up over the years, and we felt it would be worthwhile to change them.
Any other questions? Senator Hannan.
The out-of-state firm coming in, would they just have their own individuals, each person register?
Those that would be supervising the work in the state of Oregon, Senator, would be registered, yes.
So you wouldn't be registering the business name?
No, it would be those individuals would be registered personally, and they would be responsible personally for the work, much as an Oregon engineer is now.
Yeah.
But this bill would give them the opportunity to offer their services prior to receiving the job.
Dr. Knudsen, how long does it take for a person out of state to become engineer in our state?
Well, Senator Yee, it takes approximately 2 months, but the board has a provision that a person can become temporary licensed over that period that we are receiving all of the documentation on their background and so on. And in order to become licensed in Oregon, they would have to have a valid license from another state and meet all of Oregon's requirements. And it takes about 2 months for us to go through that clerical work to satisfy that. But they can receive a temporary license for that period of time.
If they have a license out of state.
Yeah, if they have a license out of state. They do have to have a valid license from out of state. And Mr. Christensen always looks over their background and their experience before he even issues a temporary license. So he's quite certain that they would be could be issued a permanent license.
Do we have any other questions for Dr. Knudsen? If not, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 427 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hannan moves to send Senate Bill 427 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any further discussions? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hannan?
Aye.
Senator House? Senator Ripper? Senator Thorne?
Aye.
Senator Tim?
Aye.
Chairman Yee?
Aye. Motion's carry. The bill will go to the floor, and Senator Hannan, would you like to carry that?
Sure.
Okay. Senator Hannan will carry that.
Move that bill.
Mm-hmm. We are going to have a work session on House Bill 2793, the lemon card bill. And we have a proposed amendment to delete motorcycles from inclusion of the law. Do you all have a copy of the amendment in front of you? 2793. Annetta, will you go over the amendment with the committee, please?
Okay, the amendment is very simple. It goes to the in line 10 of the bill under the definition of motor vehicle, which says motor vehicle means a passenger motor vehicle as defined in ORS 4104 that is sold in the state. After state, we just insert other than a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm. What is the pleasure of the committee regarding the proposed amendment to delete motorcycle from the law?
Just a quick question, Madam Chair. I guess it's okay, but you know, I might have a limited motorcycle too. I think it's kind of unfair that we're excluding.
But I feel the intent of the law is to protect the purchasers of automobiles. They can have a separate motorcycle lemon law, a lemon motorcycle law.
Okay. Well, now that you've convinced me, I'd make a motion for the amendment there.
Senator Hannan moves to adopt amendment dated May 24th, 83, E2. Any objections? No objections. Amendment is adopted. Are you objecting?
No, I'm not objecting. I just was hoping there'd be a better way to handle it, and we wouldn't have to go back for concurrence. But I guess we're probably stuck.
I don't think the House will object to this amendment. And this bill has a referral to judiciary.
Can we get that off, I wonder? I would suggest we move it to the floor. And again, before you sign off, see if we can't get concurrence from the Senate President to lift that referral. That Judiciary Committee has got, in my last count, Madam Chair, something near 250 bills.
Mm-hmm. And getting more and more.
It just isn't going to get to the bill, and so my motion would be to move it to the floor as amended, with a recommendation that their subsequent referral be rescinded. I guess that would be the motion, but implied in that, before you turn loose the bill, make sure you can get that off, or find out if there's any problems that we can address.
We'll make the motion, and then I'll talk to the Senate President about our request, so he can either let us know about one or the other. Is that agreeable to all these requesters of the bill? Mm-hmm. So Senator Thorne moves to send amended Senate Bill 783, House Bill 2793 amended, to the President's desk with a recommendation that we send it to the floor with due pass recommendation, and ask that he rescind his referral to Judiciary Committee. Any further discussion? If not, the committee clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hannan.
Aye.
Senator House. Senator Ripper. Senator Thorne.
Aye.
Senator Tim.
Aye.
Chairman Yee.
Aye. Motion's carried. Now we are going to move to work session for House Bill 2300. That's the landscaping bill.
Do you want to try to get it up too, or what do you want to do?
We can have a conceptual adoption of amendment and send it out.
They're waiting for me to move. I'll accept a conceptual adoption of amendment. I'll give you my proxy.
Oh, okay. Can we do that?
You did it.
You did it.
Right. We're good.
I will look at the amendments after they've been conceptually adopted.
I don't know if we can do that or not. Why don't you stay 1 minute and we'll hear.
Okay.
Elaine, will you come up to the stand and answer two questions the committee has for you? And one has to do whether the landscape contractors who have lower than 5,000 income, whether they file tax returns on their income. And that's Senator Tim's question. And number two is, the committee has concern about landscape contractors being able to withdraw claims above $200.
Madam Chair, my name is Elaine Johnston Day. I'm the administrator for the Landscape Contractors Advisory Board. In response to Senator Tim's question, I don't know.
I knew you'd give me that answer.
And frankly, I worked for revenue for 6 years in the audit division, and they wouldn't tell me if I called and asked. My records are available if they want to check my information against theirs. My records are available and are public information. But as far as my checking to theirs, that's not available.
Mainly, Madam Chair.
Senator Timms.
Mainly just a discussion that we were having. It seems that there has been some press on the fact that people that do landscape work and that type of work are not declaring their monies, and I'm sure they're probably not registered with the association in that case, possibly. But I thought it would be interesting to check to see if individuals really are declaring that income, which they should be paying taxes on. And that is, you were with the Department of Revenue, and it's not possible to ask for a check, association and their membership, in relation. relation to income tax filed or whatever?
Not from me. They can ask me for the information, but I can't ask them and get an answer. Because that's confidential information as to who has filed tax returns, even between one state agency and another.
Well, I'm new, so I don't understand the legal ramifications. That makes sense.
Well, we have to hope all of them are honest. And that they file their tax returns.
In response to the other question, I think the concern was about landscape contractors who have received consumer complaints.
Mm-hmm.
If the consumer complaint is over $200,
mm-hmm.
The landscape contractor can request it be removed from the jurisdiction of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Then the consumer has to take it to court. Madam Chair, I relayed my feeling about that to both Senator Ripper and Senator Houck, and as the administrator of the board, I would be ecstatic if that were deleted from the law.
Mm-hmm.
It has not been a problem. We have had two instances of that in 4 years, but it is certainly could be a potential problem, and I would be just as happy to have it taken out.
Let's see. Can you pinpoint exactly which paragraph it is?
Get the bill, Madam Chair.
It's
Annetta.
Page 7 of the bill, section 18.
Page 7, section 18. Elaine, last time during the hearing, you said this is in the Constitution, that they have the constitutional right.
Okay.
To do
what, Madam Chair, what happened was in 1979 when this was put into the law, I had my assistant attorney general go with me to legislative council to argue against putting that in. Legislative council at that time said anyone has a right to take a claim to court over $200 is a constitutional right to take it to court. What we got bogged down in going back through my notes was a matter of semantics. And yes, everybody has a right to take it to court. What this says, however, is that it then forces the consumer to take it to court, and the contractor can, and the consumer has that right anyway without it being in this law. The way this is written, what it says is, well, horror story form, if we had a little old lady that hired a landscape contractor to do a job, and he did a bad job. She filed a complaint. The complaint was for $1,000. He could write to the board and say, I want it taken out of your jurisdiction. I want it to go to court. At that point, the issue is dead unless that consumer then goes to court and files against him. And he may know how to play the game well enough to know that it's not likely that that particular consumer would be sophisticated enough or have the financial resources to do that.
Elaine thinks Senator Thorne is waiting to vote on the amendment. Can you just tell us what is the effect of deleting this section? Would that place the burden, if there is a claim, will the board be able to make a decision through the hearing process, and then the burden will be on the contractor to take it to court if he's not satisfied with the hearing officer's decision?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
I think this is what the committee is concerned with, that the board cannot rule on any claims, and that the contractor can take it away from the board's decision and leave the burden on the claimer.
The consumer. That's
to
right.
Take it to court, and most of the time they don't want to go through the court process just to settle on something not too expensive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
you want this conceptual amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Then Thorne moves.
Kind of like a magnificent conception, is that what we're talking about?
I don't want to ask you what's a magnificent conception. Senator moves to delete section 18.
No, not the section.
Not the whole section.
That appropriate part that if I understand, mm-hmm. our conception, which would give the contractor an opportunity to circumvent the jurisdiction of the department as it relates to that amount of the claim over $200. That's what we're mm-hmm. talking about, isn't it?
Yes.
Elaine, will you tell us up to where should that be deleted?
I'd make my motion, let council work it out for us.
Madam Chairman, I did talk at Senator Ripper's request. I did talk to Legislative Council Kathleen, and she said that she would like for us to do it conceptually, and she will prepare the amendments accordingly.
Okay. So Senator Thorne moves conceptually the deletion of portions of Section 18 to allow the board to go through the hearing process to determine claims. If there's no objection, the amendment is adopted. Do you want to send it to the floor? Or you want to look at the amendment?
It probably wouldn't hurt to look at that amendment after mm-hmm. we get it. I think that would be a smart idea.
Okay, then we'll schedule another work session when the any questions for Mr. Gutzler? Mr. Gutzler, can you tell us what does it cost to get a fidelity bond, say, at $25,000?
Madam Chairperson, I don't believe I can answer that. It seems to me that our premium is around $900 a year, and that's for a $100,000 fidelity bond.
Oh.
Now,
900 a year.
I believe that's about what it is. I could be off on that, but I think that's in the ballpark.
For 100,000.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now the limits aren't.
How many employees do you have?
And at that time, I think when we got last renewed this last August, we would have had probably 7 or 8 employees.
Does it depend on the number of employees?
Yes, I think so, but it varies from one underwriter to another. And as Mr. Hawes said, I think the underwriters go quite a bit, that is the fidelity insurance underwriters, go quite a bit upon what control they think is exercised on the particular escrow company by the owners thereof. And in our case, of course, being locally owned and locally managed, and we are known personally to our agent, and the underwriter is pretty well assured that we're watching the money. That might not be true if it were absentee ownership or there were other circumstances involved.
Mr. Gutzler, under what circumstances is it difficult to get fidelity bond?
I really don't know personally, but I know that the agents did some checking with various bonding sources. And the responses they got pretty much were that it's a sort of a personal underwriting type approach, where if the underwriter just happens to feel insecure for reasons not necessarily disclosed, either the rate is extremely high or they just say we don't care to write in that particular location or for this particular risk. And I don't know that we know exactly what the conditions are. I haven't personally had the problem. But it may also be that because we've had our bond with the same agent and we've had a clean record and we've had through the same company, that they have no reason to question it. But if you have a loss, then immediately there's reluctance on the part of the, because for a $900 premium, they're not going to pay very many $25,000 losses. They obviously, if you don't have any losses, they look at you differently than if you even have a threat of one. So that's the best answer I can give. It's not complete, I'm sure.
So you mean for a combination of reasons such as it's costly and it's difficult to get fidelity bond, and since it's already assured by a surety bond, fidelity bond is really not necessary?
I believe that's true. And to legislate a requirement that an employer protect himself against his employees may not be appropriate. We feel that that's the employer's responsibility. The surety bond is for the benefit of the public.
Mm-hmm. So if employers are careful in selecting their employee, there really is no need for the fidelity bond.
That's the real crux of the whole thing. If you are careful about selecting your employees and careful about supervising them, your chances of loss are a whole lot better than if you are not careful and have all kinds of insurance.
Because
you won't have the insurance very long.
Okay. Do we have any further questions?
Just to make a slight observation, Madam Chair. I'm not a great
slide.
I'm not very. I'm in agreement to do away with this because it doesn't have that much consumer protection to it. I do know some little bit about bonding going through about three different agencies now. And when we were going through the Builders Board, we wanted the state to take it over because we discovered that the bonds were worth about $1.5 million a year, and the amount that the bonding companies were paying, because the law limits to what we have to pay, like I think it's $2,500, their amount of payments were somewhere around $100,000, and we figured if the state, if I remember right, Tom, you probably were there too, and because we have that requirement, the bonding company got up where it was $150 for a $2,500 bond, and they don't pay out very much, and because it's in our law, why, it's just a great profit. We just took one off down in Ways and Means, or we're attempting to. You'll have a bill on the floor very shortly, which said that everybody who is a notary public has to be bonded for $500. They haven't paid a claim. It brings in $1 million-some-odd a year. And the bonding companies were down there saying, we would like to raise this to $1,500. Nobody collects on one of them. And, you know, it's just kind of a... But as soon as we put it into law, the fee goes up, the payments, you know, it's not based on... These things are not based on actuary rates like anything else is. There's nothing to do with them. And I'm sure that what you're talking about, they would charge whatever the traffic would bear. And if this guy didn't have, the broker was new, we'll say only been in business 2 or 3 years, if his assets weren't worth the $100,000, his bond probably would be up to the $2,000 or $3,000 a year. You know, you've been in there for a long time. Your assets are probably good. You have a long history, no claims. Your rate's probably pretty cheap. But it doesn't work like anything else. It's probably the biggest ripoff that the state does for insurance companies is the bonding that we require in trying to protect customers. But part of our problem is that we always set the limits that it has to be paid, and that automatically means they go up. So I could go through another one. I've been through 2 or 3 of these, but it really is... not the protection that we think it is, and it's kind of a ripoff against business in the sense of what they collect. Hmm?
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Ripper, we have a full employment act for lawyers sometimes, and I suppose they are full employment act for insurance companies.
Well, they are when we put them in, you know, and designate the amounts of the liability. If you had that, you had to have a fidelity bond with no limitation on it, then the rate would probably be much greater, or much less, than it, because each one would be taking out whatever he felt was necessary to be secure of what his employees might have the chance to abscond with. But and that changes the rate altogether, because then it gets like fire insurance and a lot of other things. I've expressed some of my feelings. I guess I've been around here too darn long, but I see too many of the ripoffs that come, and this is, I think, is one of them.
Was there any opposition from insurance companies or bonding companies on the House side on this bill?
Mr. Hawes, I think, knows of one such instance.
There was testimony from, Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, there was a testimony from, at the initial hearing, from a representative of Oregon Automobile. He was a local agent for Oregon Automobile, or Oregon Auto is what I call it. I'm not sure what the formal name is. And it turned out, we talked with him later, turned out that we had met with his underwriter for Oregon Auto at the meeting, and Oregon Auto was not writing or willing to write fidelity bonding under the fidelity provision. But he had written a policy earlier in the same situation that Mr. Gutzler described. And so when we straightened that out, no, there was no opposition.
Well, he attended the meeting, but he did not oppose the bill.
No, he attended the meeting and opposed the repeal because he had written one and thought anybody could write them until we talked with his underwriter, and his underwriter got back to him and, in effect, explained what their problems were with writing fidelity bonding statewide.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Senator Hanna, take action on this?
Yes.
Do you think we should take action on this?
Do
you
want to report it out? Okay. Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 2123 to the floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Senator Hanna moves to send House Bill 2123 to the floor with two-pass recommendation. Any further discussion? If there's no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hannon.
Aye.
Senator Howe. Senator Ripper.
Aye.
Senator Thorne. Senator Stibbs.
Aye.
Chairman Yee.
Aye. Motion's carried. Senator Ripper.
We said, okay, that'll be fine. Mm-hmm. We could balance the budget if we went into the bonding business.
Why don't we have a state bonding?
We tried very hard to do it.
Senator Whipper would carry the bill.
We tried to do it very hard in the building board because
meeting is adjourned.
The state has been making over $1 million a year.
Oh, why don't we do that?
Well.